Hey, everybody. Welcome back to StadiaCast. I'm Bill. That's Lloyd. What's going on, Lloyd?
Not much, man. It's a new month. According to my watch, it's the 5th of a new month. I can't believe that it's September already. What the heck is happening?
Before we actually get started, for those of you that don't know, my day job is I'm a teacher, and that means I am back to work, which means that I'm going to have a little bit less time to work on Nerd Nest stuff. So sorry about that, but I'll keep plugging away and making stuff. It just will probably come out at a little bit slower pace because now I'm at work all day, and you know, I get home from work and I'm usually working on work stuff after that as well. So no, there you have that. What's that?
No more 2 p.m. streams for Bill, essentially, yeah. Is what he's saying.
Yeah, essentially, yeah, because I'll still be at work at that time. All right. So if you did not know, this is StadiaCast. This is the number one podcast all about Stadia. So if you're listening to this and you're like, where can I watch the video version of this? And you would head on over to nerdnest.tv. We record the show live every single Sunday morning at 10 a.m. On Sundays. And just so everybody knows, after this episode is done recording, Lloyd and I are going to be playing D&D with our D&D group, also live here on the channel, so stick around for that as well. And then if you want to support the show, there's a bunch of buttons down below. Click on those buttons, see how they work, and support the show. We really do appreciate it. Lloyd, what have you been playing?
Actually, a fair bit this week. We got our pro games, so I quickly jumped into Darksiders 2. Just to see how good the port was after hearing about the other game I've been playing, well, how bad that port was. Jumped into Darksiders 2, only played about 15, 20 minutes, because I've already played Darksiders 2 on a couple different platforms. It looks beautiful on Stadia. It looks gorgeous. It plays really well. So I may be playing Darksiders 2 for the third time, maybe. I really enjoy that game. I probably won't beat it, but I might put some time into it because it is... really, really well done on Stadia.
Yeah, that's one that, like, I looked at, like, I was sitting down and I was I had everything ready for today, and I sat down and I was like, I'm going to play a game. And I loaded up, Stadia, and I looked at Darksiders 2, and I said, I don't want to get sucked into a game. I'm already playing another extremely involved game right now, so I need something that's a little lighter. So I ended up not playing Darksiders 2 yet, but that's definitely something that's on my list for the future. It's definitely a game that I want to play. I've been playing... Well, okay, so first off, I didn't play it on Stadia. I played this on Xbox because it's the only way that I could play it, and that's Riders Republic. They had the beta. It was like an open beta where you could go in and play. And I have to say, what I've played, I'm incredibly disappointed with, which is really, really sad. Now, that being said, let me say why I found it to be kind of disappointing. It's so over the top and ridiculous, and I'm not talking about the gameplay. I'm talking about the cutscenes where the people are talking to each other. I find the whole extreme nonsense to be just stupidly annoying and ridiculous. And maybe I'm insulated from this because of living in the middle of nowhere, but I cannot imagine that there are people who seriously have conversations like this. And it's stupid cutscenes, so at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter, but it was just so annoying that I wanted to shut it off. Now, the gameplay itself, I did play like the bike riding and the wing suit, like jet glider thing, and a couple of the other stuff, and I thought that was pretty fun. But all of the stuff around that I found to be very, very irritating. Now, there's one thing that I'm very much still looking forward to, and that's Zen mode, because the mode that I was playing in, as you play, you're like first off, they force you into the BMX bikes first, whether you want to or not. I would very much prefer to just say, all right, well, I just want to do the snowboarding stuff. So I'm just going to play the snowboarding stuff and nothing else if that's what I want. And that's kind of what Zen mode, I guess, is supposed to be, where it's just You just do your own thing. It's open world. Do your own thing. That sounds fine. The career mode was irritating and grating, and I didn't like it. What you had a thought about that, Lloyd?
I was just going to say, you said there aren't people that talk like that. I just wanted to say, I work on a university campus. There are definitely people that talk like that, but they're very few and far between. That's all I wanted to throw in.
Okay, that's fine. Those people are irritating, and I hope that they stay away from me, because I understand having slang. When I was a kid, you know, like, we all had slang that we used, and, you know, as a gamer, I have slang that I use all the time. But this was just like every third word was like I had to get out my, you know, my English to you know, I'm not even going to say anything insulting. My English right. to slang dictionary and look it up and be like, oh, OK, he's talking about getting a burger or something. Just shut up. It was so irritating.
You have to get your kid to come sit beside you to do real-time translation. He could be Google for you while you sit there and do the real-time translation.
That's right. Extreme. Yeah, it felt very 1990s extreme, yeah. Where it was like, where Doritos would have like a giant X on the package because that was the cool thing, and the X games. And I know, right. like, that's what they're kind of going for. But I just wanted to play like a snowboarding game, and I found it to be really, really just grating. Anyway, that's Riders Republic. What else have you been playing?
I jumped into Ark, a long-awaited version of Ark. Ark is a really interesting game where when it was originally released on PC, it was pretty much unplayable for everybody because you needed the beefiest of beefy PCs to get a decent frame rate. So that's kind of how it made a splash into the world. And then they started doing these console ports, and I think the Xbox port was okay. I think that was one that was decent. But then I remember it came out on the Nintendo Switch, and it had like a max resolution of like 320 by 200, and it just looked like trash. And I'm like, oh my God, this is a bad port. So I was really wondering what would happen on Stadia. Jumped in, and I guess I wasn't disappointed because I expected the port to be bad, and it seems really, really bad, really bad. But then I saw our good friend Jem, who's in the chat room right now, put out a video on using console commands and stuff, and we'll get into that. We're going to talk about that news. And then the game was playable. It, like, doing all the max settings, I was getting over 60 frames a second. Everything looked good. And then I was like, okay, but I don't really want to play Ark. So then I jumped off of that game. What a weird path for this game to come out. Like, promised, not really delayed because they said summer, but people thought, you know, maybe it would be out in summer, not the end of summer. And then it came out, and it's just a really badly, poorly optimized port, or at least the default settings are poorly optimized, because if you can unlock the frame rate and increase your draw distance and increase the shadow and texture quality, and you're still getting 60 to 100 frames a second at 4K, the game should have probably shipped with higher defaults. I would guess maybe when you get into like the really big PvP stuff and you're sneaking through and you're getting into big battles, maybe the frame rate dips, and maybe that's the concession that they did. But man, what a flawed port. But I guess if you're into survival games like Minecraft or whatever, or Valheim, like, you don't really care so much about the graphics. It's about the gameplay. So maybe the gameplay is there. I'm not a big fan of Ark from the get-go, so I haven't given it the time to see if maybe the fun is there for it. But just jumping in for the first time, oof, that's an oof.
Yeah, I did the same thing. I loaded it up and tried it, and I had never played it. And I tweeted this out. I was trying to find the tweet so I could get my words exactly right. But I said something along the lines of, based on what I had heard about all of the other ports of Ark, my expectations for this game were incredibly low, and unfortunately, the game met those expectations. It is just... It's 30 frames per second. I was walking around, and like a giant rock, literally 10 feet away from me, just pops right into existence. And I was like,
right.
What the? Like, I've never seen pop in that bad on a game. If you don't know what pop-in is, generally what happens is a game can only draw so much stuff on the screen at once. And depending on how optimized the engine is and your hardware, what it has to do is it has to say, all right, well, I'm not going to draw this thing until you get this distance away. And so, like, 10 feet in front of me, things were just appearing, and it is a very, very bad experience to have that happen. Because I was just, like, so blown away at how bad the game looked. And then we might as well talk about it right now. Jem made this video where he is explaining how terrible, like, he shows how, like, it's 30 frames per second. You do all these little commands, and you should definitely watch his video if you want to try it out. You do all these little commands, and then afterwards, the game looks better and runs better. Like, that's crazy to me. I just can't imagine why they would ship the game like that. Unless, the only reason that's acceptable is because in PvP, like, it dips real, real bad. And maybe that's the case. I don't know. I didn't play it for long enough because I was just so unimpressed by the game that I shut it down. But, wow, I mean, just, it's such a head scratcher. And, like, one of the things that Jem said in his video was how many ports did we get that were intentionally bad? And I don't like to throw around the lazy moniker when it comes to game devs, because as somebody who doesn't make video games, I personally don't know how much work goes into optimizing something. It's like when, as a teacher, when somebody says, oh, well, you spend all summer not working, and I just want to choke that person, because, like, are you out of your mind? I work all the time. That's like, you have to, as a teacher, you can't just work when the students are there. And the same with, like, podcasting or making a YouTube video. People are like, oh, he put out a 10-minute video, he must have spent 10 minutes working on that video. No, that's not how it works. So, like, I hate to say lazy when it comes to ports, but I feel like this just felt like a lazy port. And I just don't know what, maybe I don't know what I'm talking about, but what an absolute terrible, terrible experience is.
The funny thing was to see the normal trolls that jump out on a lot of Twitter and videos and saying, see, look, Stadia's trash. I can't even run this old game. What a terrible service. I can't believe you guys pay money for this. And then literally 10 minutes later, Jem comes out with the video saying, no, Arc can run better. It's not Stadia, it's the port, which we've always been saying. The games that run poorly on Stadia, it's not a fault of Stadia, it's a fault of the software, which Stadia doesn't write. Stadia does the hardware and the service and the API and all that fun stuff. So the hardware is definitely much more performant than some devs are utilizing. So I was kind of wondering what would happen with Arc, but seeing when you do all those settings and the game runs great, like, obviously the Stadia blades are way more powerful than this developer is using. So hopefully that will happen in time. The developer, whoever's doing the port, is going to make the base settings maybe a little bit bigger, or maybe have some defaults that you can choose from. I wouldn't be surprised to see that console command kind of disappear. The ability to hit the tilde key or the back tick key on your keyboard to bring up that little console when you're playing on mouse and keyboard. I wouldn't be surprised if that disappears. That was probably something that wasn't intended to be in the shipping version on Stadia, but I could be wrong. Maybe they're like, okay, this is the default settings that we're shipping for everybody. If you want to make it better, you can do it. You just have to punch in all these strange commands every single time. So yeah, it's interesting. We'll see what happens with Ark. It's not a game that I enjoy personally. I don't like hard survival games where you die, all your stuff's on your body, people can steal your stuff. Like, that's not the type of fun I have. I know a lot of people have fun in games like that. That's not my type of game. But hopefully this game, the defaults will be fixed for people that do want to play it on Google Stadia.
Yeah, there's another problem with Sorry about that. There's another problem with this game as well, and that's the multiplayer is restricted to official servers. So if you want, like, if we wanted to make a Nerd Nest server, we essentially can't. And I wish that that were not the case, because that means that you're stuck on, like, these official servers with a bunch of other people. Now, I did. Does the game have, like, a single player only mode where I can just run around with dinosaurs and never have to interact with other people? Because in that case, like, that should have all of the graphics at max. And then maybe when you're in multiplayer, have the graphics, you know, more limited. Obviously, not as limited as they are, but more limited.
Yeah, I'm fairly certain that it is an online-only game with servers. I don't think you can run a local server on the box that you're playing it on. That would be the really good way to fix it. Make it a single-player game, a single-player game mode, and crank everything up. Jem is saying it does have a single-player mode.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay. Interesting. I didn't see that from the menu, but again, not a game that I've played a lot.
Same.
A lot of, so I didn't. I just went into a random PvE server and and then got stomped on by a big dinosaur and then ran into the water and got eaten by a piranha. And then I said, yay, this is fun.
It's funny. Somebody had posted this in our community Discord. And if you guys don't know about it, each week we make a thread in the Stadia, channel that is for the next episode of StadiaCast, where people can drop stuff in. And somebody dropped in an image of the Nintendo seal of quality. And for those of you that don't know, like, back in the day, Nintendo basically said devs can only make so many games per year on our platform, and we get to approve them because we're the only ones that can, we have the carts, basically. And like the Nintendo seal of quality, while it really meant, excuse me, sorry about that, while it really meant one thing, Nintendo was trying to get people to understand or to think that it meant that this is, oh, all of our games are good games. And the platform holders are the final decision on whether or not a game gets onto a platform. Do you think that, like, Google should look at a game like Ark and say, you know what? We're not comfortable with you releasing this on our platform because it's going to make our platform look bad.
Right.
Go back to the drawing board, or, you know, spend 10 minutes in the command line and unlock things, and then we'll be okay. Like, do you think that that's something that Google should have done?
I don't know. I like the ability of a platform holder or the... Not ability. Ability's not the word I'm trying to say. But anyway, I like the... platform holders to be able to decide what state they want to release a game in, the publishers, rather, the developers, the platform holder. I like to be sort of, I don't know, a step away. Google already does the gatekeeping, basically saying whether people can or cannot start writing games for Stadia. To get access to Stadia as a developer, you have to go through a big process. But when it comes to a game like Ark, that is really, really bad. I don't know. That is a really interesting question. Is that something that Google should step in just for that game and maybe leave other ones to kind of do other stuff? I don't know. It's very, very interesting. You saw Cyberpunk kind of failed out of the starting gate on pretty much every other platform. But only really Sony did anything about it. They said, you know what, we're not selling this game anymore. Everybody else kind of just said, you know what, we didn't release the game. They released the game. If you have problems, talk to them, which is kind of a hands-off way to do it. Because if you look at the Nintendo Seal of Quality, even Nintendo doesn't use the Nintendo Seal of Quality anymore.
No.
There's some pretty terrible games on the Switch. So, yeah, that's a really good question, Bill. I don't know what kind of – or which side of that argument I fall on. I tend to defer to developers saying they're making the game. That's their vision of the game. They should be able to put out whatever game they want.
I think
want.
They need glasses.
But yeah, sometimes maybe LASIK. They could do a GoFundMe for some LASIK, maybe to bring that back up to, I don't know, be able to see textures to tell that they're not really good on the game. Maybe that would be a good thing. I don't know.
Yeah. All right. Moving on past the ridiculousness that is Ark, which is a game that I never would have tried if it were not part of Stadia Pro. And I probably will never play again. Although, just a quick update on Stadia Pro. Last week I said I had not yet claimed Paw Patrol and I didn't plan on it. I accidentally claimed it this week when I hit the claim all button and I was mad about it. So there's that. But another game that I've been playing is another Stadia Pro title, and that's or not been playing. Another game that I've tried out is Little Big Workshop. Have you played that one yet, Lloyd?
Yeah, I did the first look of that game when it first came out, or close to when it first came out. I really like these types of games, so I definitely had to play the first one that dropped on Stadia, and I enjoyed it at the time, for sure.
I feel like this game is one of the, like, you could get sucked into this game and spend a billion hours playing right. Nothing but Little Big Workshop. So, for those of you that don't know what it is, it's so cute. It's got like this tabletop and on your tabletop, you have like this little building with like these little tiny people in your building and it's their workshop and they're building, like toys and shelves and other objects to sell, right. to customers and stuff. And basically you are in charge of all of the chain of from raw material to finished product completely. So you're like, all right, well, I'm at this workbench, we're going to cut the wood down to planks. And then at this workbench, we're going to take those planks and turn them into thing A. And then at this workbench, we're going to take thing A, combine it with thing B from two other workbenches somewhere else, and make a thing C. And you keep going through this entire product creation chain until you then have the finished product, and you completely control everything about how to make this product. It's so cool. Yeah. And then you also have to manage your workers. So like your workers come in and they can get worn out. So you have to build them a break room where they can go and have coffee and snacks and play foosball and all this stuff. Incredibly cool. I don't know if I'm ever going to play it again, because I don't have time for a game right. like that. Like, that game is just so engrossing, and it plays wonderfully on controller, which is always a big plus for me. It's definitely the kind of game that I feel like would play better on mouse and keyboard, but I never felt like I was a second-class citizen when it came to using a controller instead. It plays really, really well, and the graphics are awesome. I'm a big fan of Little Big Workshop. So I definitely recommend that to people who have not yet tried it.
Yeah, it's really good. I don't know how far you got, but eventually you unlock the ability to have kind of different iterations or different versions of the type of components that you're making. So you might be making a shelf and you have to make like the little wooden pieces that go under the shelf. Mm-hmm. And then you can make the wooden pieces just plain, or they can be metal, or they can be super fancy. And when you get super fancy, sometimes you have to then make another chain. So you start in this machine, and then you take all that stuff and you put it over by this machine, and then someone else uses that machine to machine those things, and then they bring them back. And it can get really, really complicated. I really dig that. I really, really dug it. It's a really good game. But yeah, like you said, Bill, sometimes the missions can get very, very long.
Yeah, I think it's a really, really cool game, and I'm enjoying it. You've also been playing Destiny 2 again.
Yeah, ever since the cross-platform stuff came in, I jumped back into Destiny 2 and actually found myself having a lot of fun. So I went to the other platforms that I've played on, and I was like, okay, cross plays enabled. What I didn't realize is there's also cross progression. So what you can do, everyone that's listening to this probably knows, but I found it surprising. I thought every platform would have their own characters, like their own saved, warriors, but then you would then have kind of like the cross play. So you could play with your friends irregardless of what platform you're on. But actually, when you go and you do kind of your cross progression setup, you can log into every platform. So I've played on PlayStation, Xbox, and Stadia. You can log into every platform, and then you can choose which one is your preferred platform. And then those fighters, those characters that you've created, will be selectable on all the other platforms, which was huge to me, because there's times when maybe I want to play on Xbox because I want to use my Xbox headset to chat with friends that only use that voice chat method. But then I can still use the characters that I play on Stadia, because that's my main tune. So super surprising. Anyway, that's a story about Destiny 2 cross-play and cross-progression. Jumping back in, you know what I figured out, Bill? Don't do the story. Just do bounties, because if you want to level up and power up, don't do the story. Don't worry about the story. I was going back and I'm like, I got to take on all the stories on the moon and go through all that. And then I got to go to like Venus
Europa and
Europa. And I was going to make a joke, but I'm not going to.
come on.
and then I was like, I want to do all the story content. Well, you level up so slow on story content. I just claimed bounties for the last 2 days and I'm already at season pass level almost 10, I think. So yeah, I'm really enjoying Destiny 2, and this cross play thing just totally changed the way I game. So I'm a big fan of the game now, and we'll see how far I get. I bought the season pass, which is something I said I would never do, just to see how that all went out. And if I don't get to level 100, I'll never buy another season pass. It's kind of my limiter on these types of games. So it's in my own best interest to get to level 100. Or maybe it's not in my own best interest, because then will give me time to play other games.
So I want to focus on this for just a second, because I've never bought the season pass on Destiny 2. I've bought season passes on other games, but just once. So like with Fortnite, when you buy the season pass, if you complete the season pass or even play just enough of it, you end up with enough in-game currency to buy the season pass next time as well. Is that how it works in Destiny 2?
I don't know if you can get silver from the season pass. Okay. I haven't looked too closely. Maybe that's something that's best asked to the chat room. I don't think so, but maybe. And if that's the case, then yeah, I'll keep getting the season passes, provided I get up to tier 100. But
Carl in chat is saying no.
Yeah, there you go. I didn't think so. I don't remember seeing the silver icon when I was paging through the season pass. But yeah, like our clan is still going. It doesn't look like we have any a lot of people playing, so we're only at level 1, I think, of that. So all the bonuses you get for being part of a clan haven't popped yet. Hopefully that'll happen really, really soon. But yeah, I'm really digging Destiny 2 again. We'll have to do some Destiny 2 nights or something with the community. I think that would be a lot of fun.
Absolutely. And if you have not yet joined our clan, it's called Nerd Nest, and I'm sure somebody in our community Discord can help you to join that. I don't remember how to do it, because like I made the clan and then I never did anything with it because I stopped playing. If you join our community Discord, there's a link in the description down below. If you're watching this on our YouTube channel, you can join the Discord and somebody there will help you get into the clan. And then you can find people to shoot at things with, which is really, really cool. I did play a little bit with I think it was Eddie from our community Discord. I was playing on my Xbox because I want to see how crossplay worked. So I was playing on my Xbox and he was playing on his on Stadia, and like I saw him in like the clan list and I was like, oh, okay. So I sent him a message on Discord. Can I invite you? I just want to make sure that's cool. And he's like, yeah, go ahead. And so I joined on him, and he was already doing like some mission, and we were just put into a group together. And then we got on voice chat in Discord, and we had some fun shooting things. And there were some really cool moments we were doing a story thing, and I was like, wow, that was a cool fight that he and I went through. It was really cool. So that game's cool. And every time I play it, I'm always just awestruck at how pretty that game is. It is absolutely gorgeous. The artists for that game have done an amazing job. All right, moving on. Legend of the Keepers. I played a little bit of this. I find this game to be... It makes me just want to play Darkest Dungeon, which is, it feels like it's the anti-Darkest Dungeon. In Darkest Dungeon, you have a set of heroes, you go into a dungeon, you kill the monsters, you get the loot, you come back out, there's a whole health and sanity component going on there, and this is the reverse of that. You design the dungeon, you fight against the heroes, and you want to kill them before they get to the loot at the end. It seems right. cool, but it just makes me want to play Darkest Dungeon instead. Will say this. I had trouble telling what I had highlighted because, like, it would have something highlighted, and, like, the outline of that highlight is so, like, razor thin. And I'm like,
right.
I can't tell which of these things I have highlighted. So I'm paging back and forth on the controller. And, oh, okay, I see it now. That was a little frustrating. I think the UI needs help, and I think it's because they went with, like, an 8-bit thing, but it's also a little too minimalist for me. I think it's a cool game, but I think it's in a genre that there are better versions of. Does that make sense?
Sure. Yeah, it definitely seems to me, because I did, when the game first came out, I did a first look on our channel. Really enjoyed it. Haven't gone back to it, though, so that, I guess that says something about what my actual full feelings of the game are. But it definitely looks like a game that was designed for, like, an iPad. It definitely seems more like a touch interface, so maybe that's where the selecting thing is a little bit off, because you're used to on a touch screen being a little bit more hands-on with the UI, pun intended, I guess. You're hands-on with the UI, you're a little bit more in that world, where if you're using a controller, it's really it's really tough to see. So I can definitely see that. The game itself is really fun, though. I really wish it was more roguelite than roguelike, because as you make your way through a dungeon, you don't really take a lot of upgrades to the next time that you do it. You take some upgrades, you keep your characters and things like that. But I was hoping for more of a kind of build up how big badass of a boss you are, and then every run would be that much easier. I think I did maybe 15 runs, and they kind of all ended in the same place. So it's one of those games where you unlock things, but then you have to use a lot of strategery to get a little bit further than you did last time. A really fun game, and again, like the pro titles this month, there's something for everyone. Yeah, there's something for everyone. Ark, massively multiplayer. Well, minorly
multiplayer.
Minimally multiplayer survival game. You have a full-on RPG with Darksiders 2 action RPG, 3D action RPG. You have a crafting simulation game. You have a strategy game. It's just amazing. Stadia Pro continues to offer some great value for their $10 a month. Everyone says, but it's not as good as Xbox. Well, yeah, okay. You can have more than one thing exist, and you don't have to only go with the one. The value that we get on Stadia is pretty decent, and the types of games that they keep adding to Pro keep being diverse and continue to give something for everyone, which is pretty darn fantastic.
Yeah, especially because, like, I share my Pro subscription is shared with my family, so like, I get these games, but then so does everybody who is in my family. I think it's five other accounts, they can all also use the games that I'm getting. We can't play them at the same time unless one of us buys them, but it's a ridiculously good deal. And the thing that I think a lot of people forget is games don't leave Pro. I mean, you can no longer claim them after a certain amount of time, but games don't leave Pro. Once you've claimed it, you can always play it as long as you're subscribed, which I want to talk about Stadia Pro, and this will give us a segue into the news. Blue Fire. Last week, we told you that Blue Fire was no longer going to be part of Stadia Pro, and then during the This Week on Stadia post, they said, good news, we announced last week that Blue Fire would no longer be available to pick up with Pro. but as of today, but we are happy to report it will in fact remain available to claim free with Stadia Pro for quite a while yet. I did like an open mic earlier this week. If you haven't already subscribed and turned on the bell notification, you probably missed that. An open mic is where basically I turn on the camera and I talk about whatever YouTube chat wants me to talk about. And one of the things that I said during that was, I wonder if this is because the devs, like, they had the old deal. Just to remind everybody, Stadia recently changed the way that devs or publishers make money on Stadia Pro. And my guess is that Blue Fire was going to leave Pro based on the old deal, but the publisher said, you know what, we're going to make more money if we keep it in Stadia Pro, so we're going to extend that. Now, I don't have any inside knowledge on this, and there's no way that anybody at Stadia would tell anybody the internal business dealings between them and a publisher. But right. That's my guess. Do you agree with that, Lloyd?
Yeah, what I think happened is they signed a three-month contract to have their game part of Pro for 3 months, because I think it's been in for about 3 months. They got to the end of the thing saying, Stadia says, okay, this game's coming out. Then the Blue Fire devs are like, what? We don't want to leave Pro. How can we get it? How can we keep it in Pro? And then they had a meeting with whatever business person they needed to at Stadia. They signed a new contract, and then Blue Fire is now part of Pro for quite a while yet. I don't know what that means in time. Is that a day? Is that 6 months? We don't know. but they signed another deal to keep it part of Pro. And I think we're going to get that. And actually, I wouldn't be surprised to see games re-enter Pro with this new revenue sharing deal, because there's going to be a lot less money outlaid by Stadia, I would assume, to get people part of that. It's now, you only get money if people play your game. So you could see some developers that were maybe part of Pro before saying, well, people are still playing our game. We have the stats to prove it. Let's get back in Pro, and maybe that maybe those numbers, the numbers of people playing will increase, and it'll equal a bigger paycheck for us.
Yeah, and over time, that's only going to get better and better as more and more people get access to it. I still say the biggest limiting factor for Stadia right now, and cloud gaming in general, well, definitely for Stadia, is the number of countries that it's in. Like right now, there's a whole, like every time Stadia posts anything, invariably somebody says, well, what about, when is it coming to my country? And for those people, I totally understand why you're champing at the bit to try and get to be able to play it. But the reason is probably because of the chip shortage and all of the pandemic stuff that has slowed the rollout for Stadia. But over time, that's only going to increase. It's only going to end up in more countries. There's only ever going to be more people playing on it, because it's a thing that people don't have to buy. Nobody has to go out and buy a box to put under their TV to play Stadia. They just got to play on the devices that they already have. And because of that, the customer base is just going to keep growing. And as that base keeps growing, that incentivizes publishers, especially with the new incentives, to bring their games into Stadia Pro, which makes Stadia Pro even more attractive to potential customers, because you can subscribe. I think if you subscribe right now, you get access to, oh, I don't have it in front of me. I think it's like 30 games or something like that. Like, yeah. Like at this moment, I mean, I have well over 100 games from Stadia Pro, I think, at this point. But if you subscribe right now, you get like 30 games for $10, and you can get like, I think it was, is it 2 months free if you use somebody's link?
Yeah, if you use someone's link, you get 2 months of Pro for free. You get one free, you pay for one, and then I think you get another one free after. I think that's how they do it. I could be wrong, but I think that's kind of how it goes. And I'm looking right now. This is an old chart, unfortunately. I can't find the latest chart to see exactly how many are in there. But yeah, you get a big bunch of games that you can then play for a very long time.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on from the This Week in Stadia post. Oh, no, go ahead.
In lead in the chat room, the person that I was looking for the chart, I couldn't find it, but they're right in the chat room, which is fantastic. Perfect. 31 pro games currently a part of the program. So if you become a pro member, you immediately get 31 games that you can play until your pro subscription lapses.
Yeah, there you go. And there is a link in the description down below where you can click on that link and it'll get you like a free month of Stadia Pro. And I think it gives me a free month of Stadia Pro, even though like Google provides Lloyd and I with free Stadia Pro for covering the stuff. So I don't actually get anything from it, but you do. So there you go. All right. Let's move on to Ubisoft Plus. It says get Ubisoft Plus everywhere you can get Stadia. However, there's like a new payment plan, which I think a lot of people are kind of irritated with. We'll talk about that in a second. But right now, well, up until like a week ago or whenever this post came out, up until recently, you could only play Ubisoft Plus in certain countries. Now it's available wherever you can play Stadia, and probably some other places as well. But if you know, this is a Stadia show, but anywhere that you have access to Stadia, you can now play Ubisoft Plus games. I know you subscribed to it for a short amount of time and then ended up letting it lapse, mostly because you already owned most of the games that you had access to.
Right.
What do you think about the price going from $15 a month up to $18 a month? So they're increasing the price in order to play, or you can lock in your price by subscribing now and becoming a founder. What are your thoughts on that, Lloyd?
Yeah, it's interesting. This has been rumored for a while because they had some text on their Ubisoft Plus page saying, for right now, while in beta, you can play, you can stream games in the cloud for no additional price. So everyone's like wondering, is this just a CYA text on the bottom of the page, or did they really have a plan? Now this is a thing. So if you want to stream games through Ubisoft Plus, you have to pay $3 more a month to do that. When I signed up for Ubisoft Plus, it was $19.99 Canadian, because our money is worth less than the US, so our prices are always a little bit more expensive. But I think now it's like $25 if you want to do the Ubisoft Plus the streaming thing. I don't find myself doing that very often. It's definitely not an option. It's not something that I would keep going for an entire year. Ubisoft Plus, all for me, was always going to be a service where I would buy in for 1 month, play all the games, play the DLC, play all that fun stuff, and then cancel at the end of the month, because you can oftentimes find Ubisoft games for like $20 just a few months after launch. So most of the games, I wouldn't buy Ubisoft to play the new titles so much. I'd wait for a sale. But it's actually a decent value if you want to play the DLC, but you don't want to buy the DLC because season passes almost never go on sale for these games. And if you want to play the Valhalla season pass to get the two story modes, it might be cheaper just to jump in, buy a month of Ubisoft Plus, play through all that DLC, and then cancel if that's what you want to do. So one of those weird services for me. I don't see a problem charging an extra $3 for cloud streaming, although Ubisoft Plus doesn't actually have to pay money for the cloud streaming. It's a free service for them because they're not paying to stream the games, I don't believe. Like they're not using their data centers. They're not using any of their data. This seems like a bit of a cash grab, but I don't have a problem with it, which is kind of weird. Usually I'd be against something that is maybe anti-consumer a little bit, but I think this is a small enough increase that it's not such a big deal for me.
I don't know how I feel about this. I'm struggling with it mostly like most of the time. If something feels anti-consumer to me, I'm like, ah, you know, I get mad about it. But for this, I feel like I wish that I understood, because I feel like that's the thing is there's something going on here that justifies that extra $3.
Right.
But I don't understand what it is. And Ubisoft is not telling us what it is, and it's just like that is very, very confusing to me. Like,
right,
most of the time if a company is saying this is the price and here's why it's the price, because they need to justify me opening up my wallet to them, and they are not justifying it. They're just saying it costs more on streaming, and they're not telling me why. And that's the part that's driving me bananas. I don't get why they would do that. That just seems like bad business. They should be explaining themselves in order to convince people so that they'd be like, oh, well, I was on with you, But then they explained why, and I'm like, oh, well, that makes sense. That's the reason why. Right now, it doesn't make any sense to me why it should be $3 more. It's only $3, so whatever. I mean, I don't subscribe to Ubisoft Plus anyway, and I'm not really interested in it. I prefer to just buy a game, but I don't know. Kind of weird.
It very much is. It's a thing that makes me think that it should almost be more expensive for people that aren't playing on the cloud, because Ubisoft has to manage the servers, put the games up, do patching, downloads. They actually have to pay real money for the stuff that people that are downloading the PC versions, that costs Ubisoft money. I can't see the cloud streaming version costing Ubisoft money, because all that data is being handled by Luna or Stadia. So really weird. Maybe we'll find out more about that in the future, but if you want to lock it in, if you don't want that extra $3, you can sign up for Ubisoft Plus right now. It'll pay $15 a month, and then that's it. You'll keep that price. You won't pay the $3 more a month until you cancel and then resubscribe.
Yeah, in lead in chat is saying, you know, the costs might be because of additional infrastructure for cross progression, but I mean, that is the case no matter what platform you're playing on, so that part I don't understand. And somebody else also, not in our chat, but somebody had said something along the lines of, oh my god, my brain just stopped working. They should have a Stadia only version, because there's some games that are not available. Like, I can subscribe to Ubisoft Plus, and on my Xbox I can play game A, and on that game does not exist on Stadia yet, because the port hasn't been completed or whatever. And so I don't have access to that game that I'm paying for. So there should actually be like a cheaper version, because I can't play the games because I don't have a device to play them on. And that makes sense as well to me. I did ask in chat, I asked in chat a poll, and I just closed it, and I'm waiting for it to open back up. But I basically said, are you going to subscribe to Ubisoft Plus and stay as a founder? And 86% said no, and only 13% said yes. So I find that to be pretty interesting. And if you want to participate in polls like this, join us for the live show every Sunday morning, 10 a.m., nerdnest.tv. All right. Change your name. Did you change your name, Lloyd?
I didn't. My name is still Lloyd. I haven't changed it at all.
I thought you were going to talk more about this.
No, you asked me if I changed my name. I said no.
All right.
So, are you talking about Stadia name change, Bill?
Yeah.
I also did not change my Stadia name, but now it's good that you can self-service change your own name. You don't have to go to Stadia support at all to do this anymore. You can go to your profile, you click on Stadia settings, where it says Stadia name and avatar, you click the change your name button, enter in the Stadia name that you want, and then your desired Stadia name will be reflected to be what you just chose.
Yeah, there you go. I tried to use it because when it's funny, so when Stadia, I was probably the first person to stream Stadia on YouTube. I was doing an open mic where I was just talking to people, and Stadia released, but people didn't have access to their accounts yet. And then I got access to my account, but I claimed the name Bill on the wrong email address, because I was just in a hurry and I was live and I was doing everything quickly. And so I had Bill on the wrong email address. And what happened is the reason it's the wrong email address, because somebody might say, well, who cares what email address it is? The reason I care is because of family sharing. Same. So I claimed it on the wrong email address, and now the name Bill is locked to that email address, and I cannot unlock it from that email address. I contacted Google, and they said no. We don't have a mechanism for you to do that. So I'm still Run Jump Stomp on Stadia. You can send me a friend request. And Bill is my other account that I never play as, because I everything is on this other email account. So it's kind of irritating, but that's what happened. But I think it's cool that people can change their names. You know, you hate to be... I've seen a lot of people, like, they post like their you play a game with them on Xbox or whatever, and you're like, well, you know, you seem like a nice person. I expected you to be a horrible moron because of the name that you picked. And they're like, yeah, I was 13 when I picked that name. Oh, okay, I get it now. And then they're like stuck with that name. You don't want to be stuck with a name. You want to be able to change it whenever you want. So I think that this is a good thing.
What you didn't think that XX underscore murder death killers 420 underscore XX was going to be a nice guy? Come on. Totally sounds like a nice guy.
Well, you know, I passed judgment and I apologize to XX murder death killer 420 XX. All right. Moving on from that, let's see. Let's look back at the show notes. This is very interesting, and I don't know how much of an actual effect this will have on Stadia. Well, actually, I think it might on extremely low-powered devices. And this Chrome 94 beta test has like this some next-gen tech for what they're calling web codecs and web GPU. Now, web GPU, I don't think that applies to us even a little. I think that like web GPU is all about like browser games. And I don't mean Stadia or cloud gaming. I'm talking about a game that's running on your local device in the browser, like Farmville or like something like that. This shows how long it's been since I've played a browser game that I could think of. Farmville. Although I will say this, listen up everybody, one of my favorite and my wife's favorite browser games of all time is Funeral Quest.
Funeral Quest is great.
And like, it's not really available anymore. So if you know where you could play it, let me know. Because it was a Flash game and you can't play it anymore. All right. Anyway, so web codecs is the other thing. And basically, here's what they have to say over on The Verge. They said, web codecs is an API designed to give developers better access to video encoding / decoding codecs, which is a bad sentence because codec means code and decode. So, like, they don't need all that. Better to video codecs, which already are bundled in with your browser, which figure out what to do with video streams. While there are already methods of getting video to play in Chrome, they're not necessarily designed for things like cloud gaming, which is at best when it's as low latency as possible. Web codecs is built to avoid overhead, making it easier for incoming video to stream on your screen as fast as possible, potentially with the help of hardware decoding. This will also, in theory, make it perform better than it does on slower machines. Now, so if you are playing in a Chromecast or a Google TV, you're probably, this does not matter to you. But if you're playing on a four-year-old, you know, refurbished Chromebook, then this could be a big deal.
Yeah, it's really interesting. When you get APIs like this that are built into the web browser, you don't have to write software that runs in the web browser that says, okay, what's your resolution? What's your CPU? You don't have to do any tests to see how performant the thing is before you set up the stream. You just say, okay, web GPU, start stream. And then it figures out all the codecs, figures out what will run well, figures out which GPU you can use in your system for hardware acceleration. And it just takes that away from developers having to kind of have their code see what is there and then make changes. It just allows the API to communicate with the hardware and the developers communicate with the API. So it simplifies everything. This is going to be a good thing, especially if you're running really old hardware, because this version of Chrome will do all the hard lifting to see what your device can support, and then it will just automatically support that without the web PWAs or any web apps or web pages having to do all that work themselves, provided they're using the new APIs to find this stuff out. So it's a really good thing. I'm a big fan of this. Google is always about making the web faster and easier. So whenever they make a big change like this, it takes a while before anybody but Google uses it. But then eventually everybody will start using it. So I'm a big, big fan of that. Yeah.
If you take this and you combine it with like AV1, which is a new codec that Google's been working on in conjunction with others, this is the perfect example of something that doesn't affect current Stadia users very much, but will affect a lot of other people who are currently left out either due to hardware constraints or bandwidth constraints. The combination of the web codecs and AV1, web codecs making it easier for your older machine to be able to decode the stream, and AV1 being able to compress that stream into a smaller space, those things make it easier for more people to actually experience it. And when you play cloud gaming stuff, like I've played Luna, I've played Xbox Cloud Gaming, I've played GeForce Now, I've played Stadia. Of all of them, Stadia is by far the most seamless and the one that feels like I'm playing on a local machine. And the rest of them slowly get they're worse and worse and worse. I think Luna and GeForce Now are kind of tied, and Xbox is like way off in the distance. Of course, your mileage may vary, but I think that the more people that Google can get this stuff in front of, the better. And this brings right back to the idea where their biggest limiting factor, because they're solving problems in software, and their biggest limiting factor right now is hardware, because they can't put the hardware where they need to because of the chip shortage, which is why you can't find a PlayStation, and why you can't find an Xbox, and why I bet we're going to have a hard time finding the OLED switches. Or you can't find a graphics card. It's because of that chip shortage, and that's affecting Stadia too. And everybody seems to forget about that because you don't buy hardware for Stadia for your house. And people forget about that.
Yeah, exactly. So this is going to be a good thing for kind of the internet as a whole. Hopefully that means Stadia and other services can take advantage of it to make the decision for what is supported on that device without having the developers have to just support everything with a big if statement, essentially. They can just let the API do the heavy lifting, and hopefully this will mean better and more performant web stuff for everybody out there that is using Chrome.
Yeah, and just to respond to something that Bad Mojo in chat said, he said people usually need to improve their router situation too. Absolutely. Yep. If you're trying to play cloud gaming, not just Stadia, but cloud gaming, and you've got like a 7-year-old router that you bought at Best Buy, it might be time to upgrade. Did you just raise your hand, Lloyd? What are you doing?
Yeah. Well, I had a really old router that came from my service provider, because you can't use your own routers up here.
Oh.
You have to always have the thing from your service provider, whether it's your cable company or phone company. I had an old one, and they were saying that it was fine 100%, yet I was having constant pauses and drops on Stadia. So I said, okay, I've done tests. I've used the same service at my friend's house that lives down the street. I've done this. I've done that. It's clearly my hardware. It took 2 months, it seemed like, to finally get them to agree to replace it. They replaced it. Everything started working perfectly fine. So networking is definitely the weak link for cloud gaming. You might have gigabit Ethernet, but if something's wrong with your router or there's a short in one of your cables, it's not going to perform that way. So if you are ever doing network testing, just bring along a Stadia controller and test those people's network, and you'll be able to tell if the network's working or not, because you definitely need to have 100% tip-top shape networking for cloud gaming to work really well.
Yeah, and I've seen some people say things like, well, that's why cloud gaming is doomed, but it's the same issue with PC gaming, where you have to have really good PC hardware in order to really enjoy the games to their full potential. You know, getting a really good router and a really good PC hardware, it's a lot cheaper to get a really good router. And so that opens it up to a lot more people, in my opinion. All right. Anything else you want to cover before we wrap up today's episode of StadiaCast?
I don't think so. This is an information-packed episode of StadiaCast.
People in chat are like, what's Funeral Quest? All right, so real quick, I'm going to tell people what Funeral Quest is.
And then I have something about it.
Okay, you have a funeral home. It is your job to sell customers on, like, the best funeral package for their recently deceased loved ones. That's, like, the main part of the game. But then it was an online game, so at night you could go and steal from other funeral parlors and stuff like that. It was really crazy. My wife and I played it back, I don't know, 20 years ago or something. I can't remember. It was a really long time ago. It was a really, really fun game. What is it that you wanted to say about it?
I was going to say the developers of Funeral Quest was RTSoft and Robson Technologies. They made a lot of games early on in kind of the internet world. But he also made, or his company made, door games for bulletin board systems pre-internet. There was games called like Legend of the Red Dragon, a bunch of different games. My first software that I ever shipped that other people used was add-ons to door games that RTSoft wrote. So I wrote all these add-ons and shipped them, uploaded them to different BBSs, and was talking with people all over the world that were calling my bulletin board from like Australia and Europe and you name it to get the latest versions of my software that was only able to run because it was part of his software. So my I have a soft spot in my heart for Robson Technologies and Funeral Quest and all that other stuff, because the first software that I ever shipped that people paid money for was door games for bulletin boards. So I love that man, even though I've never met him.
And that just goes to show you, we've been playing video games in the cloud for a really, really long time. All right.
Right.
That's it for this episode of StadiaCast. Thank you all for hanging out with us. If you did not know, you can listen to this show on your favorite podcast player. If you're listening to this show on your favorite podcast player, you can watch this show over at nerdnest.tv. And you can check out Lloyd and I's our new show. It's been coming out about every 2 weeks. It's called On Deck. It's all about the Steam Deck. I feel like there's a lot of overlap between people who are excited about Stadia and people who are excited about the Steam Deck. So make sure that you check that show out as well. And you can also find it on our YouTube channel. Lloyd, why don't you tell everybody goodbye, and I'll hit the Stadia sound.
All right. Goodbye, everybody. And Bill will hit the Stadia sound. Have a good week, everybody.